Good morning and welcome back to Project Independence and You. We will now be going to our next segment, and I'm hoping that we do have him on the line. Max Hello? Rickman.
Hello?
Max?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I wasn't sure I was getting through, but...
No, you're here.
Good. Excellent.
We're speaking with Max Rickman, who is the CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And our audience is primarily people who fall right into that category, and all of whom, or most of whom, would be really devastated if there were any major changes to these programs in a negative way. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who count on Social Security as their only income, and that's not so great to begin with. So if anybody tries to mess with that, if you will, I'd like to just briefly introduce you. Is Max okay? Hello?
Yes, I didn't hear the last thing you said.
Yeah, I want to just kind of give a... I have a biography here of you, which is very, very impressive. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time to read it all, but I would like to point out a few things that I think are your background makes it that you are a wonderful source for us to talk about preserving Social Security and Medicare. You were a former staff director of the Senate Special Committee on Aging. You spent 16 years as a veteran on Capitol Hill, which had to be quite a challenge. You're currently the president and CEO of the nation's most influential senior advocacy and education group, and you have testified before the House and Senate committees on a variety of things. You've had appearances on CNN, C-SPAN, Fox, MSNBC, CBS, and now you finally hit the big time. You're on Project Independence and You out of LIU Post. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. You read that just the way I wrote it.
I did. I'm a good reader. No, the topic that you are involved with, obviously, really impacts many, many people, and especially in this climate that we have right at the moment. One of the things that I would love to start out with is just clarifying. There's a lot of myths and stories and stuff that is very difficult to believe or not believe or whatever. If maybe you could just sort of, trusting your experience with this, maybe clarify for the people in our audience. And I'm going to start out with a basic one that says that a lot of funding that the government does is really handled by dipping into funds that are really for Social Security. Where is that in the real world? Is that a reality, or?
You're absolutely right. There are so many myths and misunderstandings about Social Security. And you mentioned one of the most egregious ones, and that is that there's no money there because it's all been borrowed and spent by the federal government. And that, unfortunately, that myth has been perpetuated over many, many years, and it really is why especially younger people don't have confidence that Social Security will be there for them in the future. You know, I've heard people, younger folks, think they're more likely to see a UFO than to ever get a Social Security check. Nothing could be further from the truth. The way the program works is current workers pay their payroll tax. That goes into the Social Security system. For quite a few years, since the early 80s, some changes were made in the program so that more money was put in by workers than was needed to pay benefits. So that money, excess money, is put into the trust fund. It's not spent on other programs. It's invested in the Social Security trust fund. That trust fund earns interest. That interest is rolled over regularly, sometimes every day the interest is applied. So, you know, what I tell people is right now we have about $2.8 trillion that has been built up by design so that it's available When the baby boomers, such as myself, retire and start drawing benefits. And that money is not stolen. It is invested. And what it's invested in is government bonds, treasury bills, not the best interest, but the safest. You know, if you don't want to invest that in the stock market, because that is subject to a lot of fluctuations. And, you know, maybe you'd make some more money in that kind of investment at some point, but where will it be when you retire? That's the key. Social Security has been around for 83 years. Everybody who's ever been entitled to receive the benefits has received them. So that is not to say that we should never change the program. It's a dynamic program. It has changed over time. Under the current law, the trustees, they issue a report every year. They're scheduled to issue one June 5th, and they tell us the status of that trust fund. There will be sufficient funds to pay everybody every penny they are counting on until the year 2034. Then there will be a shortfall of about 20%, which is serious, and we need to make some changes, again, to prevent that from happening. That's a far cry from saying it's bankrupt, there's no money there. So there are proposals in the Congress that would address that shortfall, and hopefully we can talk about that as well.
Why do you feel that they perpetuate this myth, if you will? You know, is it for privatization, or?
I think some of it is just a misunderstanding. Some of it is a product of bombardment of the myth that there's no money there, it's stolen. But I do think that there are certain interests in our country that would love to get their hands on that money and have it invested on Wall Street. And some of those interests have a vested interest, you might say, to perpetuate that myth and to discourage people from having confidence in the program.
It's like I have a problem with it when they use the word entitlement. I have a problem with that word because it makes it sound like this is something, a freebie, if you will. And in my case, I've been paying since I'm a teenager, and I don't feel as though it's a freebie. I feel like I paid my dues, if you will. And I think a lot of people feel that way. Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. I have a big problem with that term, entitlements, because, you know, when you hear that, it conjures up the image of something that you're getting because you're living and breathing, which isn't couldn't be further from the truth. If you receive Social Security benefits, is because you earn them. You paid, as you did since you were a teenager, all those years you've had withholding FICA tax from your wages. And when that happens, what you're doing is you're buying insurance. You're buying insurance for yourself for when you retire, and for your family. I prefer the term earned benefits. You earn those benefits, and they're there when you retire. They're also there if something bad happens in the family, and you have access to the Social Insurance Disability Program. You have survivor's benefits. Children, about 3.5 million children get by in life because Social Security is there for them in the event they have a parent who died young or became disabled. So it's very important, and I'm glad you brought that up, to try to clarify that this is an earned benefit. It's not something that is, as you call it, a freebie.
Yeah, I mean, I like that term, earned benefits, and I'm going to be using that from now on.
Yes.
Wherever I can. It always frosts me when I hear entitlement. As you said, it just has a wrong image connected to it, and it's not true.
I have a question for you. 2034 is only 26 years away. Are ways being looked at so that when we get to that point, there is a plan to proceed?
Yes, there are a couple of proposals in the Congress that we have supported that would bring more revenue into the program. We're absolutely opposed to stretching out that year from 2034 by cutting benefits. They're pretty meager, as you, I'm sure you know. The average benefit is about $1,400 a month. And some of the proposals that have been talked about that would address the shortfall by cutting benefits are really uncalled for. These benefits are barely enough for people to get by on out of that Social Security check. Medicare beneficiaries have their premiums deducted every month, and they have even less money to get by. So the way to bring more revenue into the program that I think is fair is to address the cap on wages subject to the payroll tax. Right now, when you earn above $128,200 a year, which does not apply to a whole lot of people, at that point you stop paying payroll taxes. So why? Why is that? You know, I know I've met a lot of people who they don't even realize there's that cap because they pay FICA tax on all their wages and they just assume that's the way it is. But the proposals that have been getting a lot of support, one is by Congressman John Larson of Connecticut and a Senate companion bill, Senator Blumenthal, also of Connecticut. They would their plan would keep the cap at what it is and begin collecting payroll taxes at about $400,000 a year. Then they would wages would be subject to that withholding above that new cap. The cap actually goes up a little bit every year, so eventually, between the process of raising it a little bit every year and that new if it were adopted $400,000 limit, it would disappear altogether. But that proposal, I think, has a lot of merit. Those people that would begin paying again into payroll tax and having wages above $400,000 would also get a boost in their benefits when they do start.
Max, I'm sorry. We're not visually eyeball to eyeball here, but my engineer, Victoria, has given us the high sign that we have to take a break. If we could get back to the cap topic, I would love that in a minute or so. If you could hang in there with us, we'd appreciate it.